Hey, book besties, we're your hosts, Kelsey.
I'm Nikki.
And this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of graphic content and mature sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised.
This week, we will be discussing God Killer by Hannah Kaner. But first, let's get into last week's bookish news. So we don't really have a lot to get into, mainly just like two things that have kind of happened. One is more for us than anybody else. So Sarah Tucker, Miss Ma'am, she's attending a PolyCon, and then she dropped out of attending a PolyCon without like really announcing it. I just so happened to find out that she's not going anymore, which is really sad. But then her other news that she pushed back the second book. What is it? The Ballad of Fallen Dragons? So now I keep seeing like two different things where people are like, oh, it's going to come out now in February of 2026. And then randomly I'm saying, no, it's not coming out until 2027, which that seems way too long because I'm pretty sure she was like, almost done with it. She just wants like to do some more editing. So I don't see how that would take her until 2027.
Oh, I thought the original release date was May of this year. So pushing it back to February of 2026. I mean, that's still what, like 6-ish months? That makes sense. But even more than that, unless she was required to do a whole nother rewrite.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm going with the February 2026. That seems more likely than anything else.
I mean, unless there's something crazy that happened in her personal life that she's not sharing. Because, like you said, I mean, she definitely dropped out of a PolyCon with no, like, there was no post. There was no, like, public apology or, you know. Yeah. I've seen a lot of, not a lot, but I've seen other authors do, or at least give, like, a reason.
I'm not just announce it like, hey, I'm no longer going.
Right. Like, sorry, fans.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not pleased. I'm not pleased that she's not going. I'm not pleased that I didn't notice that she went until like last week. And this is the second time that I've missed out because I was supposed to see her at a book signing a few months ago, which they canceled after the storms or in preparation for the hurricanes or whatever.
Yeah.
So I missed her for that. And now I'm missing her for this. And I bought so many hardcover copies of When the Moon Hatched.
Yeah.
To get signed. Well, and I'm not pleased about it.
Because you were debating on keeping that one copy. And I was like, no, it's not like in the best condition. And we don't really need it. And yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, it was really sad. She was definitely one of my like must-see authors. And there's quite a few, too, other ones that have dropped out that I was really hoping to see. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I was, again, was really disappointed. Now, I'm not watching the Facebook groups and everything every day. But I have been amassing a library of books for attending authors. And I'm, like, kind of pissed about it for things that I paid human money for that now I'm, like, yeah, it's nice to have your book, but do I need this many copies of your book? Or
yeah.
You know,
for sure.
I don't know. I was a little disheartened. And I was kind of bummed about Kate Golden's not going now either.
Yeah, I saw that. And it was so funny because I just, like, unearthed my Dawn of Onyx. And I was like, oh, I need that. And I was like, never mind. No, I don't. I don't actually need that anymore.
No, well, all four of my Kate Golden books are coming to the shop. But,
yeah. Okay, and then the last thing I have is Allie Hazelwood. So you guys know that I absolutely love Allie Hazelwood. We just did a review of Deep End not too long ago. But so she has a couple of books that are releasing this year. So obviously Deep End was the first one. And then I think she has two or three more that are releasing throughout this year. The next like highly anticipated one is Mate, which is the second book to The Bride. It's a sequel to The Bride. But then she announced that she's going to have another, like, romance book that's going to release between Deep End and Mate. And she didn't release the title or a lot about it, but we do know that it is a contemporary romance and it is an age gap. And everybody's losing their fucking minds over the fact that it's an age gap romance. And that the ages are going to not shock you. Okay, there it's 38 and 28.
Yeah, that's a pretty reasonable age. Because by 28, you're a fully formed adult human person.
Yeah, like they're adults. Like they're full-on adults. Like when my ex and I broke up, I was 28. And so I was like back on the dating scene. And I remember like my online profiles were like, I was able to match to like, I think like I had it set at like 36 was the cutoff. But yeah, I mean, it's not that unreasonable. And a lot of people are coming to Allie's defense and are like, oh, you're upset over like literal adults, but you're totally okay with a 19-year-old and a 500-year-old as long as he's a hot fey male.
Well, that's different. It's a fantasy setting. It's not a contemporary romance setting.
I mean, but there's...
But
there's other, like, contemporary romance... Like, Credence, for example. Like, that...
Oh, you first... I need to read that. First off, you didn't pay me to read that.
Yes, but there is an age gap with... I mean, it's reverse harem, so there's multiple. But I think she's, like, 18 or 19 in Credence. And the oldest one, I'm not going to say titles because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who would want to read it. But the oldest one in that harem, I think is like 30, 32.
Well, isn't Broken Bonds, isn't her oldest one in his 30s?
Yeah.
It's not new.
No, not at all. And like, okay, you want to take it a step further? How many, Leonardo DiCaprio only dates like 18, 19, 20, 21 year olds. Once they hit like, I think 22, maybe 23, he gets rid of them and he only dates younger girls.
Yeah, but people do give him shit for that too.
I guess, but like, exactly. That makes sense, like, to give him shit for that. But this, like, come on, like, almost like 30 year olds and almost 40 year olds, like that's not anything. I don't think that's wrong. I think that's an appropriate age for an age gap romance.
I agree. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Allie Hazelwood. I was talking to my friend Cassie the other day and she described Allie Hazelwood as like she has two wheels in her writing room, and she spins one wheel and it's a kink, and she spins the other wheel and it's like some kind of like mental illness, or, you know, like, I don't want to say disability, but something along those lines. And then she just, like, mixes them together in a book.
Yeah, but it comes out great.
I've only read two Allie Hazelwood books, so I can't really agree or disagree.
Yeah. Oh, and then, like, the absolute last thing that I have, it's not really bookish news, but we went back and forth. Now, you sent me a TikTok about a book with like part of the like paragraph in the book, and I was like, immediate no. And then it ended up coming back onto like my FYP, and I was like, she was giving the synopsis of the book, and I was like, why are we gonna have to read this book?
I
think we have to.
You have to read the little paragraphy, though, if you're...
The paragraph states, and I don't want to, like, click it because I don't want it to, like, play. But I think it says his... Oh, my God. You really want me to read this on pod?
Hey, we have a disclaimer.
Okay. It's very graphic. Sexually graphic. So if you don't want to hear it, this is your chance to turn on.
They would have turned off at the disclaimer.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
His cum was something between a liquid and a solid. And shiny. A handful of liquefied pearls. It's beautiful, she whispered. Then it's like you. That is a legitimate quote from this book.
And I mean, they had me at that quote, but Kelsey was like, nope, not doing it.
Yeah, and then like the same
TikToker. Why is it chunky?
I don't.
He's got to be some kind of creature.
Mind you, she sent this to me at like 7:19 at night. I read it at 7 a.m. I read that at 7 a.m. Anyways. Yeah, so I just feel like this is either going to be, and I think the TikToker even said it's going to be, like, the worst book she's ever read or, like, the best book she's ever read. This is either going to be, like, this is either going to be, like, Forged in Blood, or this is going to be, like, Court of the Vampire Queens.
That specific book reviewer and I do not basically ever agree.
No, because she's the one who's, like, absolutely obsessed with Zodiac
Academy. Yeah. She's obsessed with Zodiac Academy. Basically, anything that I really liked, she was like, nope, and vice versa.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have to, because there's obviously, like, room on the pod space on the back half of the year. But if anybody's wondering what this book is called, it's called Kiss of the Basilisk. I don't know what I couldn't get a like a full gauge on is if this is Harry Potter fanfic that they had to change so that it wasn't Harry Potter fanfic.
Well, it was originally published under a different title, she had said, and it was either like it was something or Swallow was the original title when it was trad published, but now it's been picked up and legitimately published, and I guess they decided to change the title.
Well, yeah.
I don't think it was Spit or Swallow, but it was something that rhymed with spit. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, so the title, and I know multiple things are like basilisk, but like that, it's like big Harry Potter thing. So, I don't know, but either way, we're gonna have to read it, because now I need to know.
Yeah, I want to know. I want to know why it looks that way.
Well, I'm assuming. I know. We're not. All right. Now let's jump into the spoiler-free part of our review of Godkiller. So at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating for this book was a 3.88 with 46,000 ratings. It was released in January of 2023, and it's the first in the Fallen Gods trilogy, with the third book, Faithbringer, releasing later this year. You can find this book on KU, audiobook, and in physical form. Don't forget to use bookshop.org to get your physical copy.
It is available for free if you have Spotify Premium as well. But let's get into the description of this book. Kissin's family were killed by zealots of a fire god. Now she makes a living killing gods and enjoys it. That is until she finds a god she cannot kill. Skedi, a god of white lies, has somehow bound himself to a young noble, and they are both on the run from unknown assassins. Joined by a disillusioned knight on a secret quest, they must travel to the ruined city of Blenraiden, where the last of the wild gods reside, to each beg a favor. Pursued by demons and in the midst of burgeoning civil war, they will all face a reckoning. Something is rotting at the heart of their world, and only they can be the ones to stump it.
Yeah, you did this audio, right?
No, I did the prologue audio and the first chapter, and then I fell asleep. So that was soothing, even though the prologue was pretty hefty.
Yeah, I had no idea how to pronounce half of these names, so that's what I asked. Okay, so the genre for this book, it's a fantasy, there's mythology, it is LGBTQ, and it's new adult. The trigger warnings on this book are PTSD, death, child slavery, war, there is some slight gore, and religious sacrifices.
Are those from the book, or are those from your brain?
Those are from my brain.
Amazing.
The religious sacrifices...
Human trafficking, is that on there?
With slavery. The religious sacrifices, it is a broad range of things up to and including humans. So the prologue goes heavy right at the beginning into that. So if that's something you might be uncomfortable with, it is a big theme throughout the entire book.
Yeah, if if zealotry and religion in general bothers you, then this is not the book for you.
Yeah, no.
At all.
No, I will say that they're mythological with their gods. Like, they're gods of something. So it's not like, real world religion. Right. So. Okay, so let's go into our spice ratings. I gave it a 0.5. This is fantasy, guys. So it's heavy on the plot. There's no real romance. There's one scene. It's not very descriptive. You just know. And like the author was like, yeah, they had sex, basically.
Yeah, I agree. I give it a 0.5 jalapeno. I was very surprised that it was there.
Yeah.
At all. Because that really wasn't the tone with the book, and the two characters that were involved, I was really surprised that they came together.
Yeah, I mean, you assume that they're going to eventually. There is no real like build up to it. There's no romance on their part. I think it was more of just like a circumstance.
Or like a, hey, you know how like sometimes when people are in like life threatening situations and like, you know, the night before the battle or like the impending doom and the impending war and whatever, and people are just doing it.
Yeah.
Kind of like
vibe. Yeah, I think that was kind of the vibe. I mean, I will say I think that they do eventually like grow to have feelings for one another. It's certainly not like, oh my God, I love you. I can't live without you. But I think it's like, I care for you.
Well, I don't even think they really admitted anything other than like, I don't even think they were like, hey, we're friends. It was like, hey, I'm going to not kill you. Let's travel together.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I was actually surprised that there was any spice in this book because it is fantasy, which traditionally doesn't have spice in it. Okay, so on to our sweet pino ratings. I gave it 2.5 stars. This is mostly for, again, this isn't like romance, like, I didn't give it Sweet Pinot for romance. I gave it mostly for the love and the caring nature of kissing that she has for those who she considers her family. And then for, I pronounce her name Inara. I don't know if that's right. But Inara, like, she finds her when she's little. Like, she's 12 during the whole book. But, like, she, you know, she's like a little girl, and I think she reminds Kissin of herself when she was young, like that age. So, like, she comes to care for her, and out of like zero obligation, I think she just like is just a caring person. So that's where my sweet pino rating comes from.
Much to add or subtract? I guess I wrote here that I gave it to a sweet peppers. And I guess, yeah, Kissin so standoffish and so brash with her actions and her words, but still you can tell that she really, really does care deeply about those.
Yeah. People who matter to her, she cares about. Everybody else, she doesn't really care to associate or get to know. But once you're a part of, like, her group, I feel like she would do anything for those people. And then, like, Elo, I guess he has a little bit for, like, Arden. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name. Because, like, you know, they're, like, kind of, like, they have that brotherly bond.
Yeah, Elo and I believe it was Arden. They definitely have that, like, we grew up together bond, and also this, like, you know, loyalty to his friend and what their friendship was, and loyalty to his king, like that, like that, like, you know, duty, honor, love that you have for your monarch, I guess, that we see through fantasy novels, you know.
Yeah. So a little bit there, but it was mostly for kissing. Okay, tell us about the small report.
We don't have a small report. There's no small report. Again, like Kelsey said, this isn't a romantasy, so we don't need to know what our love interest, because there's no love interest. That's not,
yeah,
this wasn't,
yeah.
I got nothing for the small report. Nobody smells like anything.
I would assume that they wouldn't smell that great because they are traveling on the river.
They can shower once. Or they bathe in the river one time.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that nobody's smelling great when it's in. No specific smell.
Yeah. And to follow along in that for our tropes, there are no real tropes. Again, this isn't a romantasy, so you're not, like, it's not part of the storyline.
Well, I wouldn't say there's no tropes. I'm gonna go with, like, hey, we're going on a quest. This is a quest fantasy. We're going on a big, long walk through the woods. You know, a Tolkien style, if you will. And then answering the call.
Yeah. I mean, it's there. A little bit. But yeah, so none of the, like, other kind of, like, typical tropes, I would say.
I feel like most of the tropes that we always talk about kind of have to do with, like, the romance aspect, you know, yeah. The toucher and die, and the, you know.
And the enemies to lovers.
And the forced, I mean, we could say forced proximity. There is a forced proximity situation here.
Yeah.
But it's not in a romantic setting, so it hits different.
Yeah.
You know.
There's one horse, but neither of them ride him.
There is only one horse.
Okay, so let's talk about the plot characterization and world building. So first, let's kind of go over our characters. So we have Kissin. She's the god killer. She is a very strong character. Like I said before, like she and what Nikki has said, like she's very brash. She's very standoffish, but she cares about the people she loves. There's Elo, which is
that with Kissin. I feel like it's important to mention that we've got some disability rep going on here.
Oh, yeah.
Which is cool. So she is missing a limb.
Yep.
So she has a prosthetic, prosthetic leg.
Yep. Yep.
Which is kind of cool.
I know. I don't know if I've ever seen that, like, for a main character, at least, in a fantasy book. So side character.
She's also a queer character. Which I think that whole society is very queer normative.
Yeah.
Because we do approach more queer characters than we do not.
So that's good. I mean, I would definitely say LGBTQ, it's very, very open and accepted and normal in this book. So there's lots of couples that are just wives,
right, and it's really cool how she just kind of like subtly throws that in there where she's not trying to like bash it over your head. It's just woven so intricately into the story that it really just does.
It's just like, yeah,
it's just there. It's just like everyone, like it doesn't need its own discussion in the story. And I feel like sometimes when you have like the one token queer character, it's like everyone's got the author makes it a point to be like, oh, that's the queer character.
Yeah, they're exaggerated with, like, their behaviors and descriptions and stuff like that. Yeah, no, this is just like, hey, this is, like, just normal things. Like, this is a married couple. Like, they're both women. Like, her first, like, interest in the book is, like, she's trying to get with the barkeep who is a woman. Like, yeah, it's just, like, I don't know.
We're a normative society.
Yeah, it's just normal. So yeah, but it is prevalent in the book. Elo, which I think his like real name is Elagas. I don't know. He is like he was a retired knight. He was a knight in the war, and then he became a baker. And he is the one that really has PTSD. I mean, Kissin also does. Well, a lot of the characters do, but he starts off like talking about like his PTSD from the war, and he's a longtime friend of the king. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about him a little bit later, but he gives this, the whole situation between him and Arryn or Arryn or however you want to pronounce his name. It's giving Kael and Dorian vibes.
Yeah, the few interactions that they had early on in the novel really gave that whole, like, we're besties. Besties, we're brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have Inara. She's 12 in the book. She's the one that has the god that's kind of attached to her. And she has is like kind of hidden, like her mom kind of hides her from society a little bit. And then like she has some situations that happen, and she ends up going on this quest with Kissin, and she's just like, I don't know, she's like a little
She
badass.
is a very resilient child.
Yeah.
She is definitely thrown into dangerous situations, really sad situations, and she kind of just takes it in stride,
Yeah.
for a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah, because that's what she is. She's a kid, so for sure. And then we have, what did you, how did you pronounce his name?
Sketty?
Sketty? He's the god. He's like a little, he can grow his size depending, I don't know, I guess just on his will, but he can be like super small, or he can get up to, I think, about the size of, what was it, like a wolf, I think. But he's like a mix between like a deer and kind of like a
Kind of
super.
like a jackalope. I kind of got the vibe.
Yeah,
Like he's a
yeah,
hare, but like with antlers
yeah.
and
He's
wings,
and
and
he
he's
has
got
wings.
wings.
Well, he's on the front cover. I'm assuming his head on the front
Oh,
cover.
I'm assuming, yeah, but he's so big in there.
Yeah, but I would assume that's him.
I don't know either.
I don't really care. He's annoying.
So I had such mixed feelings about Sketty. So Sketty is our god. He's the god of white lies, and he is somehow tied to Inara. Like they can't be too far apart from each other, or they both like kind of fall down in pain or whatever.
Yeah, like pulls on their heart or something.
And I really wanted to care about his character, but I had trouble doing so, and that's because he is a god, and as a god, he doesn't really fall under like the. He has a different moral compass,
Yeah.
and you can't really apply the rules of like humanity and like human behavior to his character because he is a god. And so, therefore, it was kind of hard to decide if I liked him or didn't like him.
I did not like him.
Also, I think that he grows bigger or smaller based on like the belief, kind of like Tinkerbell, like the Tinkerbell fairy. Like they
Well,
grow the way when you believe in them, don't they get like sparklier or whatever?
he can, yes,
Right, but
but
it's like
he
if
can
he gets.
also just control his size.
Okay.
Because, like, and to avoid detection, because gods are, like, have been banished, like, Kissin is a god killer, and it's exactly how it sounds. She goes out and kills gods because their war was between the humans and the gods, and it was a whole thing. So like gods have been banished from the land, right? So like in order for him to not be detected, like he gets super small and like he hides on Inara's body or like in a bag and stuff. But he can grow bigger because like remember when like Inara was really mad at him and everybody was really mad at him, but he still grew to like a wolf size to like scare off the
Yeah,
bandits.
okay.
So he can control that, but like the purpose is the more people that love him or like pray to him or believe in him, the more than like the distance that he can get away from Inara, because then he can go to a different shrine.
Right. And how all the gods work in this society, the ones that are left are, the more followers they have and the more like sacrifices or like trinkets or whatever that they get, the more that their power grows.
Yeah. So, yeah, they want to be loved and revered by everybody because then that gives them the ability to exist outside of their shrines, basically.
Right. There was a bit that I didn't really understand about how the gods work, because so if their shrine is destroyed, then they start to fade
Yeah.
and they can be killed.
Yes.
But if their shrine still stands, they can't be killed, or it doesn't really matter. Or if their shrine still stands, they can be kind of reborn.
Yeah.
Like they can be remade again, even if they're killed.
Correct. Yeah. So they
Question
have
mark.
the Brigite or whatever. That is what can harm a god. And so, in order to eradicate a god fully, you not only have to like kill it, but you have to get like dismantle its main shrine. And then, like, all of the other ones you want to also get rid of, because like they can, they don't fully die until they have zero shrines.
Basically. Now, what if they had no followers, but they still had a shrine?
Then they're like, because remember when they get to Belraiden and there's like the shadow gods? That's what happens. It's like
they become non corporeal.
Because they haven't been killed, but and so they're stuck to just that whatever that shrine is, because nobody like believes in them anymore, so they can't like become corporeal and move, and like if some of them they're so far like gone that they can't even like mind speak or try and persuade you into giving things. So yeah, it's a lot. Like, this book is a lot to get into, because then they have, like, the gods, and then they have wild gods, and I'm still a little iffy on the difference of what that is. I would assume a wild god is one who is just, like...
like, older evil. And more powerful. So, like, wild god, I thought, would be maybe, like, more tied to, like, the elements? I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not, but like when I hear wild god, I thought like, you know, like forest gods or like old, old gods.
Well, I know that the fire god, what was Hestra, she's technically a wild god, but she would have been just like an old god. Cause like they say like wild gods, and then they say like old gods and new gods. So I would assume, because she's an element, like she would have been an old god, like Poseidon, who's the water god, and he's not considered a wild god. So then I assumed that wild god meant that those ones have resorted to like evil practices, like human sacrifices.
Okay, that does make sense. The god system, I think, was the most confusing.
It wasn't as fleshed out as I would have liked it to be. Like, you go into this book.
And that's the thing that she spent the most time on, in my opinion. Because, like, when we talk about, like, world building, there's not so much the building of, like, the setting.
No.
Or a place. Like, you have Glenraiden, and then you have everywhere else. And everywhere else is, like, the same flavor, and then Glenraiden is a little different.
Yeah, just think, like, medieval times, basically. Like, that's what the buildings and things, and, like, what I'm assuming the garments look like. But yeah, we don't spend a lot of time in that.
Right. There's no cultural difference between, you know, regions or anything like that that we really get to experience.
But I do like that the majority of the characters in this book are people of color.
Yes.
I do really like that. But yeah, so yeah, there is talks of like she gets descriptive with the gods, but it's still not as fleshed out as I would have liked there to be, like, a little bit of, like, maybe a glossary. Or, yeah, like, this is what is considered an old god. This is what's considered a wild god. Like, the newer gods you can kind of, like, you can pick up on, or, like, the small or the young gods, like, because they make gods for everything. But that's also, like, another thing that she doesn't spend a lot of time on is, like, how there came to be, like, how does a god come to, like, be? Because, like, she was saying, like, oh, there's gods, like, one of the gods that was still left in Belraiden was, like, the gods of sandals. Like,
broken sandals, yeah.
So, like, but she doesn't really explain how a god can be created in the first place.
Nor does she explain, like, okay, so they're basically exterminating the gods because the gods become kind of, like, twisted and whatnot. Like, they talk about the beauty god, right? And how in the beginning, like, the sacrifices to the beauty god, they you know, got rid of your scars or changed your, like, waistline or whatever. But then after a while, the god was requiring, like, as a sacrifice, people to, like, starve themselves. And they were starving themselves to death. So then how do we, like, are all gods just intrinsically, like, evil and eventually, given enough time, will, like, turn that way? Like, that's not really explained either. You know, again, there's no...
That's why
my... There's no, are the gods good? Are they bad? Are they just, like, whatever? Or we can't really attribute, again, a moral compass to them because they're gods.
So my assumption is that when they turn evil and they start demanding, like I said, like, human sacrifices, whether it's, like, like in the prologue, like literally killing people to the gods, or like, yeah, like that one demanding them to like starve themselves. I think that's why I assume like that's how they then become what's considered a wild god. And from what I read, a lot of it has to do with the greed that they like, that the god has of being like wanted. Like they almost get drunk on, because like you see it with Skedi when he is like using his influence on.
We should probably talk about that maybe in the spoiler part.
Okay, yeah, but yeah, but you see it kind of with him, like in his monologue of like getting kind of drunk on the like dedication, like
adoration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think like that is where that comes from, where they then start turning evil because they're like, I want more and more and more and more. But again, that's just my assumption. That's never confirmed.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I like it. I'm gonna go with it.
Yeah. So, but also, this book is written in multiple point of views. So you have Kissin, Ilo, Inara, and Skedi are all of the point of views that happen in this book. And then a notable side character is Aaron. Aaron, he's the king. Dude is sus, and I don't really care for him. I don't like him.
Yeah, I wasn't super happy with him either.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that more later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll get more into his character in the spoiler part. Yeah, I think that's really it about the plot and characterization and stuff. Unless you have anything else you want to add?
No, because I'm afraid if I add more, I don't want to spoil anything for the people that want to read.
Yeah, yeah, there definitely is more to talk about, but yeah, that will have to be in the spoiler part. So we'll move on to our ratings then. So I gave this book 4 stars. I think it's a great book for what it is. You know, it's fantasy, so you have to keep that in mind. Like, if you are somebody who really likes romantasy books, this is probably not going to be a book for you. It's not too long. It's, like, just shy of 300 pages. I think it has a really fantastic plot line. We talked about how we wish that they would have fleshed out a couple things, but overall, like, I really enjoyed it. I wish that there wouldn't have been so many point of views, but they're easy to follow, and it does keep the story flowing. I think it's a great example of what like a first book in the series should be, because like, you know how many times do we get a book and it's like 700 pages and it's the first book in the series and you're like, this was none of this was needed. Like, should have just been short. Here's the characters, here's the plot, here's, you know, what's going on in this world. Call it a day. This is that. So I thought it was great.
I gave it 3 stars. I did not have the wonderful experience that you did. The prologue from the bat, I was like, this book is going to be awesome. Like, the prologue hooked me. I was here for it. And then I feel like literally after the prologue was done, I feel like we changed tone of the book. And then it just dragged. It just, for me, it just dragged. It took me hours and hours. This was a short book, but I feel like it took me multiple minutes per page. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was like the writing style or just because I haven't read fantasy in a while. I just felt like it took me so long to slog through it. I feel like the action was really inconsistent. The pacing. The pacing was inconsistent. There were parts where I'm just like, oh my God, get on with it. Like, what are we doing here? Like, yes, we're walking. You know how some people complain about Lord of the Rings? How they're like, it's 3 fucking books of people walking to a mountain.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like this was just like, all right, like just a really, really long story of people walking to a city.
I feel like she could have made it way longer and it would have been miserable.
True, but I was borderline miserable. As it was.
I don't know. I thought it was a good first book. Is it the greatest book I've ever read? No. Could we have used a little bit more action in it? Yes. But I think it just sets up to, because like, you know,
it's very characterization forward.
Because how many books do we go where we have like such an action-packed first book and you're like, yes, and you think it sets the tone for the rest of the series, and then the rest of the series, or most notably the second book, especially if it's a trilogy, the second book is like, but like they don't do anything because they did all the action in the first book. I think this would set up the second book because now, like, you know, we'll go into it in the spoiler part, but now we have like a clear direction of where the story is going, and I think it can only like get better. But it's not the greatest book I've ever read. Yeah,
it was just not for me.
Okay,
that's all. It was just not for me. I think it's for the people.
Yeah,
I think it's not for me.
Yeah, I think if you like fantasy, this is a good quick read for you. If you want to try and get into fantasy, but you're not ready for high fantasy, I think this is a good starting point.
I was also actually really annoyed now that you mentioned it, as because so many of the reviews that I looked at on Goodreads compared it to like Scott Lynch and Patrick Rothfuss. And this is nowhere near either of those authors. No. This is nowhere near.
This is baby's fantasy.
Yeah.
This is not anywhere near high fantasy.
Not nearly as good as Patrick Rothfuss.
No. But like I said, I think it's a good starting point for some people. So, all right. So this is for my shelf. I already have a physical copy, so I will be keeping it.
This is not for my shelf.
Okay.
I enjoyed it, but I do not feel the need to move on to the next book. I will not be doing this. This is not for my shelf.
I think I might eventually read the next books, but they're not going to be immediately added to the top of my TBR. That's for sure. Okay, so that is going to be our spoiler-free part of our review of God Killer. As always, be sure to give us some stars, leave us a comment, let us know if there's anything that you would like us to cover. We still have, like, the back half of this year that we're still looking for books to fill, so let us know if there's anything that you were interested in hearing us review. And then join us next week for our review of Rogue King by Abigail Owens. She's also going to a PolyCon, so we're trying to keep until we go to a PolyCon. We're just trying to do a PolyCon authors, so that way we have some things that have been read, and it just gears us up for our a PolyCon episode, where we won't be doing a book review, but we will be doing a book convention review. Okay. So now we're going to jump into the spoiler part of our review. So Aaron Arif, whatever the fuck his name is, he's a backstabbing asshole.
Didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't either. But that's because we didn't really get a lot of his character. Like, he was just like, what, like seventh in line to the throne, was never supposed to be king, like he was just supposed to be like a soldier, like live out his life as nobility, and then like all of his siblings and his mom got murdered, so then he became king.
Right. And we get Elo kind of telling the story, his point of view. At no point did we really get this, you know, he's power hungry, you know, point of view. And maybe that's because Elo is an unreliable narrator because of how he feels for his lifetime friends.
Yes, but also I think like part of it is Elo then went to go be a baker and he like fucked off somewhere else. So he wasn't around him as he like...
I believe that only 3 years was in between the God War.
Yeah, it is. It's that 3 years after the war, but like still he wasn't with him like to, I guess, see that change. Because here's my theory. So we know that like he took a machete or a hammer or something to the heart, and he was dying because he took it for Elo. And then the baby fire god, or no, it was like a hearth,
right,
or a hearth god or something, was like, oh, like I will help you out, and like then put like part of her into him. And I think, like, going back to, like, the conversation we were having about gods and how they turn evil is, like, everybody adoring him. Well, then all of his adoring them, well, all of a sudden he's now, like, the king who ended the God War. And so, like, he had all of these people that were like, you know, giving him adoration and, oh my God, like, you know, saved, like, God bless the king or whatever. And I think, like, he became part God. And so that's where the greed started growing from.
That she was making such an interesting parallel before she really smacked us in the face with it, quite literally, you know, about how the gods get more, the more followers, the more adoration, the more powerful they become. And I think that she was doing a really good job of making that parallel between rulers,
yeah,
and gods, and how, you know, people start to worship them in a sense, or think of them as like holy and whatnot. And then literally she comes out and he's like, yeah, I'm going to be the first human turned god.
It's like, it's a really good foreshadowing because, yeah, she does it in a way that, like, she's foreshadowing what's going to happen with Aaron. But doesn't, like, yeah, it was like a plot twist because you didn't see it happen. She wrote that really well.
She did. Because I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I was like, oh, that's an interesting, like, social commentary. And then I was like, oh, it's the plot.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, he knew that knowing that Elo has been, like, gone and away and hasn't seen him in a long time, like, he wouldn't catch, like, he wouldn't think twice. Because the Aaron that he knows isn't like that. Like, he banished gods for a reason. And so he wouldn't think twice about being like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to go and make this sacrifice, like, or whatever, this quest for you. Because he didn't think that there was going to be an ounce of betrayal on Aaron's right. part.
But I think he also didn't agree with Aaron about the god war.
No.
Like, or that all the gods should be banished.
No, because his own mothers, you know, believe, like, where they're from, like, you know, hold true to, like, their gods. And his mom's left to go to a different continent because they're like, well, no, like, we're still going to, like, pray to our gods.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, so another thing that came about, I don't know if you caught it, but when the fire god is talking to Kissin, she refers to Inara as a halfling.
I didn't pick up on that. A weaver. I did. The only thing I remember was that she called her like a weaver or like a like an unweave, whatever the opposite of a weaver is, like an unraveler or something.
Yeah, but she refers to Inara as a halfling. So, and I think it was supposed to be a throwaway line that you weren't supposed to catch. But then, like, at the end of the book, Inara is the one who, like, gets rid of Elo's curse. Like, and she, yeah, describes it as, like, it's like a knot, and she untangles it and then gets rid of the curse because she was able to untangle Skedi's influence on her before she was able to break it. But yeah, so I think she's gonna be maybe a half god, half human.
Perhaps. I mean, we know that she was definitely sheltered from the general population for a reason, and that we know that she has some kind of powers over.
Yeah, I mean,
over god-related things. So
when she was born, her mom took her to court, and Ela remembers meeting her as a baby. And then, like, there is a statement that's made at the very beginning of the book that Lady Cryer has no more children. And so I'm assuming they put out a rumor that she died, and so she's been keeping her secret. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the two. I don't know. Interesting.
I mean, also, she could have kept her hidden because she literally has a god that's, like, stuck to her.
Yeah, but my understanding is that the mom doesn't know that. That NR kept that hidden from her mom.
Huh. I don't have an answer for that one. I didn't pick up on
but
that.
But then, like, it comes out that NR's mom is most likely part of the rebellion against the king because, like, obviously, like, she was a part of Kor and, like, I think was witnessing what was happening. So she's leading the rebellion against the king. So maybe she does know. Maybe that was her doing. Because, like, from the way that I was gathering, that Skedi came to Inara at the end of the war. No.
I know. I think that Skedi was part of Inara for as long as Inara can remember.
I think she said...
Because I think at 11 or 12 years old, she would have been, what, eight or nine? She would distinctly remember all of a sudden at 8 or 9 getting
along. No, she did. She did. She remembers. She remembers it. I think she was either 9 years... I think she was. I think she was 9 years old and she woke up and there was a god in her arms. So I think he came to be about... Because, like, remember, he, like, kind of gets his memories of, like, a boat, like, at the war and, like, a boat. And he's like, why would I be there? Like, I'm a god of white lies. But then...
That makes sense because at one point they talk about how they had loaded all the refugees onto the boat. Mm-hmm. And then one of the gods sunk the boats. So perhaps he was like a survivor.
Inara's mom was there, and that's how her mom was.
She was injured, and she was sent elsewhere before the boat situation.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if like all of that is connected, and maybe the mom is part of how Inara ended up with the god, and she's leading the rebellion. I also think it was sus that her house burned down, but then like. I think it was confirmed that the king had that done because I think he sussed out that she was part of the rebellion. But I also don't know if the mom is dead. It was never confirmed.
It was never confirmed, but the Skedi did say there are no survivors.
Yeah.
And he can't lie.
No. But maybe he thinks she's dead. Like, I mean, he's not wrong in the sense that there were no survivors. But who's to say she was actually in the house because they weren't?
True. We will not know until the second book.
No, which you will never then know.
I will never. I can Google it.
Okay, and then at the end of this book, we have Kissin, like, basically sacrifices herself to take down the fire god. Because that was, like, vengeance and revenge on, like, her family. And then she goes in the ocean. And she was, like... I'm just going to die because, like, she's being petty and she doesn't want to use, like, the gift that her dad gave her, which was, like, the water god's promise.
Right. Like, basically, it's like a boon from the water god because his father sacrificed himself to the water god. So she could have, and what she does at the end of the book, say that she's going to use it. And she's like, save me. So we know that the water god is going to save her.
Yeah, so like, yeah, we assume that she lives. She has to, right? Because she's like going to be... But
well, yeah, because I mean, she uses her thing. They're not just going to be like, oh, you're going to use your thing and then just kill her anyway.
Yeah.
She uses her, get out of jail free card from the water god.
I would assume she lives, yeah. You would think she would have to, but then at the same time, there's so many point of views, like, somebody could, like, be the one that dies, because there's technically 4 main characters, but I don't think it's her, I don't think she's,
no,
I think he uses, because now she's used up all of her stuff, because she used up the other water lady's gift, I don't know.
I think it's clear that she lives at the end.
Okay.
And that, you know, this group is going to be reunited, and because they still didn't figure out how to get Skedi separated from
Inara. No, and then at the end, he's like, I kind of now don't want to because, like, you know, you love me and I love you. And I think they're happy together.
I think part of that is because he realized, like, he was going to need another god to share his own power and that the gods are not going to want to do that.
No. But now I think Inara is, like, kind of sick of shit and wants away from him.
Yeah.
Which would be interesting. I mean, it did. This book set it up for this, like, for an interesting... Because now, like, Ilo and Inara, they're going off to find the rebellion. We assume Kissin lives, so she's probably going to go try and find them and meet up. And then, yeah, they're going to, like, they're going to go back to the one town where the dude cursed Ilo. Because they're like, oh, yeah, he's definitely part of the rebellion. Yeah. I'm intrigued. Like I said, it's not something that I'm going to like drop everything and read right away, but I'm intrigued.
Well, when you do read it, just let me know what happens.
Okay. All right, do we have anything else?
I have nothing else to add.
Okay. Well, that is it for our review of God Killer by Hannah Kaner. Like I said, join us next week for our review of The Road King by Abigail Owens. And we will see you next week.
Bye, besties.